Blog Talk Radio.
Another evening, it's another show, it's another time. Yes. It's the Brooks Directs Classical Plays written by African Americans. A very heavy topic for me. As I recall, taking on and directing several plays written by African Americans, the composition of audiences, their awareness, their experiences, and their desire to see here and experience more. I will kind of highlight on a few of those plays, Five on the Black Hand Side, A Raisin in the Sun, The Color Purple, Day of Absence, and for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow is Enough. To begin with, the African-American theater roots lies from within the victims of the slave trade from Western Africa, who retained many of their performance traditions. So they came here with performance traditions, such as ensemble improvisation, which was brought on into the New World. But think about it. There's a lot of moaning, Amazing Grace, a lot of pain, inflicted pain, a lot of suffering from the very offset. Well, how does this fit in with these classical plays written by African Americans, and yet at the same time, it's carried on forward, depicting time, space, event, and stress, emotional stress. We see that these kinds of feelings that was enacted out on plantations and in homes influenced the American culture. You know, the minstrel shows, they brought in some awareness, but too much time is spent on the minstrel shows during the 1820s and 1830s, because in the midst of that was the African Grove Theater, William H. Brown, James Hewitt, and of course Ira Aldridge. And the African Village, which today is known as Greenwich Village, where NYU is located at in New York City, where William H. Brown had his home on Bleecker Street, which he had courtyard theater in his courtyard. And then, of course, that building there, which is still in existence, and where he built a theater with 300-seat house. Okay? And, of course, the plays, the early plays dealt with plays of history like King Shadoway over the rebellion slaves made of being freed from the island of St. Croix. Anyway, eventually all of this began to evolve in what becomes known as Black theater, or the making of a movement. The Black Arts Theater Movement. Call in number is 619 924-9716. 619-924-9716. So the making of a movement, or the black theater movement, black theater arts movement, evolved from the very moment of the entry into Elmina, or the Cape Coast, or the castles, as they were called, the dungeons, whether they were in Sierra Leone, whether they were in Ghana. And, of course, for that sense and feeling of loss has taken place, which gave birth to the theater that evolved to the civil rights activism of the 1950s, the 60s, and 70s. And notice these classical plays was written during these particular time. It is a veritable period of leading figures, institution, and events of a movement that transformed the American stage. You take five on the black hand side, Charlie L. Russell, professor at Hunter's College, wrote that play to explore the gestural languages that was born in African-American communities during the 1960s and 1970s, including the DAP and the Black Power handshake. But you can see from even, you know, and the plays began to depict movements that was beginning to be acted out in the black life, and how prevalent these theaters. And yet, even in Five on the Black Hand Side, we see throughout the entire play pain, you know, pain. So this pain from the very beginning, from the village, from the cities, from the hamlets in Africa, or in or the indigenous people here in the Carib, and the Dakotas and nations, and down into Omex, and all into Brazil, and all of into New Guinea and New Zealand, and all into Australia. All of these indigenous black people endured pain inflicted upon them by their adversaries, the European. Mm-hmm. And we see youth athletes, or even President Obama giving a fist bunch or dap. We think of these gestures as mere greetings and are not aware of the origin and historical significance of these languages, because that's how we communicate it, to identify one another, to acknowledge that moaning. And of course, Douglas Turner Ward comes along, further capsules the pain in his story, Day of Absence, which is a satire. We did all these plays I've directed here at the Ponders Theater, Benedict College in Columbia, South Carolina, between the periods of 2000 until recently with Raisin in the Sun here in 2016. But Day of Absence, a satire about an imaginary southern town where all the black people have suddenly disappeared. You know, this was during the time when it was like, go back to Africa. We don't need you here. Get out of our land. I don't know where our land came from, considering the fact the indigenous people's land that the Europeans immigrated. Yeah. So the only ones left are are sick and lying in hospital beds. There we go. The sick. Lying in hospital beds, refusing to get well. Infants are crying because they are being tended to by strange parents, where white folks couldn't even take care of their own kids because they were taken care of by nannies and didn't know who their parents was when sister nanny disappeared. Now, these white folks are portrayed by black folks with white paint on their face. The mayor pleads for the president, governor, and the NAACP to send him a jackpot of jigaboos. In other words, to save the town, to keep this from spreading. If it spreads throughout the nation, what would these white folks do? How would they know how to live? What would they do when everything has been created by these black folks, this music, the whole moving forward, advancing and developing mechanically, all these sorts of things that has been the wealth of this nation, which was promoted by these black people. But this pain, where pain seemed to have been the motivation for success. And so you notice as we move along, even with Day of Absence, capsuling this pain caused these black folks to vanish. We see in the color purple. So we move from the 50s, the 60s, on into the color purple with Alice Walker, Rule Georgia, pain inflicted upon women. But what we see here, what Alice showed here with the color purple, was a glimpse of the stereotypical, I should say, copying the lifestyle that the white folks had designed for these black folks to live, treating the women the way they did, because that's how they saw the white folks treating the women, their women, treating them, talking to the men, demeaning them. And so this whole thing became black folks acting gay. Plantation owners acted out to them. In 1800s, and here this is the early 1900s, as Color Purple began to take place. And so in directing these plays, to begin to bring out some of the things that we could get in touch with today, or the young people can get in touch with today, seem as though they are thirsty for knowledge because they lack knowledge, because they do not receive knowledge. Rather, they do what Carter G. Woodson said in 1939. They say receive a miseducation of the things around them and of themselves. And so these plays begin to tap into their system, which draws out from them this pain that they can identify with. So this pain then seems to be the running theme. Even when we get into Raisin in the Sun, Lorraine Hansberry, we see the pain of families stuffed into this small apartment. Little boy sleeping on the couch, you know, just racing to the bathroom down the hall where all the other tenants living on that floor are racing to get in too. So this jockeying for position just to get into the bathroom to take care of your personal business. Striving to want to get into a whole nother environment so that they can move out of the slums and get into fresh air with the sunshine and green grass and a little patch of grass for the little Travis to run around with and have a sense of feeling of ownership. But the underlying theme still reverberates to the beginning of being hauled out of your own village, out of your own home onto ships, and then exposed to racism. So you have racism, you have the pain, you have from the very beginning, and we see it running through. Meanwhile, we see the pain and the racism during these periods from that time all the way through these periods into the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and 70s, and is already on the news, and you can go into the archives and see footage of it, seeing black folks in pain, promoted by racism. So we see these themes going, even though we're not wearing raggedy clothes and we don't have chains, we do have watches on our arms and chains around our necks. The theme remains the same. And so, as we move on into the Black Art Movement, which was the name given to a group of politically motivated black poets, artists, dramatists, musicians, and writers who emerged in the wake of the Black Power Movement. So you see how all of this kind of coinciding was working hand in hand with the poet Amari Baraka, Imamu Amari Baraka, who was widely considered to be the father of the Black Arts Movement. Well, this began around 1965, 1975. And of course, after the Malcolm X assassination in 1965, those who embraced the Black Power Movement often fell into one of the two camps, the revolutionary nationalists, who was best represented by the Black Panther Party, and the cultural nationalists. The latter group called for the creation of poetry, novels, visual arts, and theater to reflect pride in black history and culture. So you see the evolution of these plays as being running parallel to whatever movement that was going on into the societal structure between the black and the white world, and what was going on stage, not only coincide with one another, but embraced one another, dealing with the same two factors, pain and racism. Pain and racism. What it is. That was moaning when Ento Zaki Shenge with For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough. Yeah, that was moaning. One thing I don't need is any more apologies. I got sorry greeting me at my front door. You can keep yours. I don't know what to do with them. They don't open doors or bring the sun back. They don't make me happy or get a morning paper. Didn't nobody stop using my tears to wash cars because of sorry. Huh. That's moaning. That's showing up for real moaning. I remember the old folks used to say, coming up, boy, don't come here telling me you sorry because I can't stand no sorry. You know. And come in here because I'll give you something for you to be sorry about. You just want to be sorry.
Go give me that stick.
Shoot.
But that's it. Because it's all moving. Although the success of sit-ins and public demonstrations of the black student movement in the 1960s may have inspired black intellectuals, artists, and political activists to form politicized cultural groups, many black arts activists rejected the non-militant integrational ideologies of the civil rights movement and instead favored those of the black liberation struggle, which placed an emphasis on self-determination through self-reliance and black control of significant businesses, organizations, agencies, and institutions. The thing about that is, we already was doing that. Look at Wall Street. I'm talking about Black Wall Street. Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm talking about Florida. I'm talking about Atlanta Beach, New Jersey. I'm talking about upstate New York at our dude ranches, casino resorts, you know, hot springs we had out there in Arkansas, you know, insurance companies, radio stations. But of course, integration came in, and then, you know, black life took another twist and another turn. Yes, it did. Until the point that it was lost. What happened? Where did things go? Huh? All of a sudden, we started getting different kinds of... That's why we have classical plays, African-American classical plays, because... We don't have any plays now, do we? I mean, Dreamgirls was cool, and we did that also. You know, but it had Weinstein's print was on there. You know, you had so many other different little things. The Wiz was okay. An adaptation of The Wizard of Oz. Oh, that was all right. But I'm talking about, where are the plays today? Huh? What are we dealing with now? Well, we can talk about the classical plays, but they have to take us somewhere. It has to lead us somewhere. Huh? Or do we continue to expound upon them until we can move into other fields of thoughts, other ways of expression today? Is it because we already have a black president that we have reached the pinnacle of whatever it is that all other people enjoy when they come to America to be a part of the dream, to get what has been promised to those who come seeking passing the Statue of Liberty on their way to the Ellis Islands of the country today? So, the Black Arts Movement left behind many timeless and sterling pieces of literature, poetry, and theater. You know, there's Nikki Giovanni, Sonia Sanchez, Sange. And then, of course, you have the spoken word and hip-hop. I don't know too much about what is the latest piece of hip hop. What has it contributed? I don't know. I don't want to get into that because some people say that that has been the savior, but I don't know. But what I do know is that it all ended in 1959 when A Raisin in the Sun debuted on Broadway. And that was our recent production where Lorraine Hansberry became the first African-American woman to have a play performed on Broadway, and white audiences were introduced to the racism, sexism, and the alienation present in African-American communities throughout the United States. That's where it's at. It ended, and that's where it still is today.
So, having had this little discussion, as Brooks directs classical plays written by African Americans, the effect that it has on the composition of audiences, it's more. I mean, right now, I was just told recently, say, man, you're known in the streets of this country. What do they mean by that? So I asked the brother earlier today, what did you mean by that? You were telling me yesterday, well, man, they're talking about you. Talking about you and how you direct these plays and how you bring these plays to life where little children can understand it. Adults can get meanings from it. Young people get understanding. So perhaps that's what it is. Now it's what you're going to do next. I've been given some list of names of what to do next. You know, Five on the Black Hand Side was a family structured play, A Raising the Sun, family structured play, The Color Purple, family structured, Day of Absence, as well as Colored Girls, was family structured, even though there was extended family, but family structured at the same time, with the same theme running through them, pain and racism and sexism, abusiveness, madness. But yet at the same time being brought in, at the same time developing characters to present these kinds of things that is inflicting their lives, but at the same time developing characters that show them as real live human beings today and their struggle to move forward, to advance, to develop, to be a part of. During the 1960s, activism became the dominant theme of much black theater. An all-black cast set an off-Broadway record with its long run of The Blacks, 1961, a parable of colonialism by the white Frenchman Jean Genet. The interracial free Southern theater brought an electric array of plays to the rural South as part of the civil rights movement. Leroy Jones, who later adapted the name Marat Baraka, wrote Dutchman, an inflammatory one-act play in which a white woman murders a black youth on a New York subway. And James Baldwin wrote Blues for Mr. Charlie in 1995, an embedded view of the civil rights movement in the middle to late 1960s after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, 1965. And concurrent with the escalation of the Vietnam War and the Black Power movement, there was a huge explosion of black theater nationwide. Over 600 new companies was formed. Most existed only briefly, but others, including the National Black Theater and the New Federal, lasted for years and made major contributions. The New Lafayette Theater, 1966-72, produced group created rituals or racial and political themes, as well as many plays by Ed Bullins, including In the Wine Time, 1968, and Going to Buffalo, 1968, and in 1967, of course, Douglas Turner Award, author of the satiric civil rights play Day of Absence, 1965, co-founded New York's Negro Ensemble Company. This prolific group produced many important works, including Lonnie Elder's Ceremonies in Dark Old Men's, 1969, Joseph A. Walker's The River Niger, 1972. That's the play that brought me to Columbia, that brought me to Benedict, as I came here as an actor playing Johnny Williams in that play, and then later becoming a professor and chair of the Fine Arts Department, evolving from the character Johnny O. Walker. And, of course, Charles Fuller's A Soldier's Play. How many of y'all remember that? 1981. And trained hundreds of black actors, designers, and stagehands by the early 1990s through the National, the Negro Ensemble Company, though the National, or the Negro Ensemble Company was struggling to survive. So that's where we are. We need to hear from the young actors and actresses today for your contribution. For your consciousness, talking about the awareness, the experiences, and now the desire has been fumed for more, asking more, more, more black theater, more knowledge, more awareness. WCDB. This is CDB3. Signing off. Until the next time.